Il corner dentro, il colpo di testa, Zapata! Zapata! Dovrebbe essere gol! È gol! Zapata! Lo dice la Goal Line Technology! Al 97esimo il Milan trova il 2-2, impazzisce la curva sud!
Hello everyone and welcome back to the fifth installment of this season's Sempre Milan podcast. I'm joined by the Twitter famous Nikita Fezyukov.
Hi guys, I'm here again with you after a slight pause in the last podcast, but yeah, I'm here now, so really appreciate that you're listening to this.
And we are joined by, for the first time, Piero Manino.
Hey, how's it going, fellas?
Yeah, well, not so great after this weekend, but I suppose we better delve straight into it because, you know, we titled episode number 3 the Rant Edition, and I think that this is going to be pretty much the same, if not even worse. Boys, let's start with the first game. On Thursday night, we played at home against HNK Rijeka, a Croatian team. For 80 minutes or so, we looked comfortable in the game. And then next thing you know, after 90 minutes, it's 2 apiece. We ended up getting the win thanks to a stoppage time strike from Patrick Cutrone. He pretty much rescued Montella's arse on that one. Nikita, you know, what did you think of the game? Can Rijeka count themselves a bit unlucky not to get a point from the game? And do you think that it's a sign that this is a squad with a lot of problems?
Yeah, honestly, I think most of the game was really dull. I mean, the game was very boring, but we looked sort of in control. We didn't seem that we were going to concede until that shocking error from Bonucci and Romagnoli at the end. So, I mean, in the end, I would have probably taken the 2-0 win if it had been like the same way for the 90 minutes. But then the last 10 minutes, oh man, that was actually shocking. And I think Rijeka definitely deserved at least a point from the San Siro because overall they were like quite aggressive and dangerous throughout the game, but they just lacked something in the final third of the game of the pitch. So I think we're really lucky that Borini and Cutrone somehow rescued the 3 points for us. And well, what to say more? I didn't like the attitude, but had it been that way for the whole game, had it ended in a comfortable 2-0 win, I would have probably been quite satisfied, let's say. But once again, I mean, the squad showed that it's not ready, and I don't really see much in the game, as I didn't see against Roma and I didn't see against Rijeka themselves. So I think it was enough for Rijeka to win against Rijeka. But overall, I think we're going to struggle a lot if we continue like this. So that's my take on it. And I hope it'll improve, but I don't see the light at the end of the tunnel, honestly.
Yeah, it's very dark at the moment. Obviously, there's question marks about Montella, and there was going into that game against Rijeka. Basically, Piero, no win at the moment seems to be straightforward for us, does it?
No, it doesn't. And you would think at this point, after Montella's had the team for over 2 months, which was the whole point of buying all these players very early in the transfer market, you would think that you would see the imprint of his team, which is, you know, possession heavy, trying to dominate the game, take it to the opponent. But we haven't really seen that so far.
Yeah, and I think part of the problem with what we saw on Thursday night was that sometimes the team can become a bit too comfortable, I think. I wasn't alone, I think, in thinking that at 2-0 up against Rijeka at home, the job was pretty much done. But then, as we've seen, when teams have a go at us, like Cagliari did and like Udinese did, both in Serie A, we can find things pretty difficult at home. I mean, yeah, the first goal for Rijeka was very fortunate in a way, but yeah, it was also an error. But I think the ricochet off Donnarumma certainly, and then the spin of the ball inside the post, but yeah, an inexcusable goal to concede. And then the penalty again comes down to a poor piece of individual judgment from Romagnoli. Just touching on Romagnoli, Nikita, he's not had the best start to the season since his return from injury, has he?
Yeah, he hasn't been exactly as good as we actually expected him to be. We thought that alongside Bonucci and Musacchio, two like really good defenders, he'd be capable of showing his full potential and developing into the player we want him to become. But I don't know, for some reason, it's not working for him. He seems, I don't know, his build-up play and his passing is good as always, but overall I think he's really reckless. His concentration is insufficient, and I feel that he, I don't know, I would have expected much more with Bonucci alongside him, because I remember when there was a friendly game, or I don't know, it was a friendly, maybe it was a qualifier against Spain, when Italy played with a back three of, I think it was Chiellini, Bonucci, and Romagnoli. And Romagnoli was spectacular in that game. He was really great. I mean, obviously the injury probably was quite a setback for him, but I still expected much more because it's been over a month that he's fully fit. Well, over a month, let's say half a month, but still, I expect much more from him. And I don't know, maybe the three-man defense isn't exactly for him, but I really wish it is, and he will improve. But as of now, really, really not so good performances from Alessio.
Piero, do you think he's going to grow into this three at the back formation, or do you think we need to change the formation and to make him look a bit more comfortable, or where do we go from here?
It's an interesting question. I think that for the most part, we've seen him excel in a four-man back. I'm wondering to what extent he's regressed because he's no longer the main focal point at the back or the man that's responsible for making sure we're keeping goals out. Like last season, I think he played a much better part in the team in a four-man back, but it could have also been a consequence of the fact that he needed to be that much better. And it's possible that with better men around him, maybe he feels a little more lax, and that maybe somebody like Bonucci at his back can contain some of his errors.
Yeah, before the season, I was very much of the thinking that if we were to keep with the four-man defense, then we needed to sign someone to go alongside Romagnoli. Paletta was solid for large parts of last season, but he also, racked up the red cards pretty often. And then when you're bringing in players like Gustavo Gomez and Christian Zapata, I think it was clear to see that we had a hole. And then when we signed Matteo Musacchio, it seemed I wasn't convinced that we were going to play him and Romagnoli together in a back four because they're very similar as players. I think both, leave a fair bit to be desired in terms of aerial duels, but both good ball playing defenders. A bit too similar for my liking. I think if you're going to play with a central defensive pairing, you need one to be in command in the air and one to be the ball playing defender. And that's why I think that Bonucci and Romagnoli together in a partnership would work well, or Bonucci and Musacchio, but perhaps not Romagnoli and Musacchio together. So if we were to switch to a four-man defence once again, I think that's something that Montella has to consider. But for the time being, it seems that he's going to go with this 3-3-5-2 formation. But looking up the other end of the field, Nikita, how important was it for Cutrone's confidence, and his belief that he managed to score that late winner? Do you think that he's going to use that and go to Montella's door and say, "Look, I need to be starting games more consistently"?
Yeah, I think it was huge for his confidence. As the first two goals of the season were for him, as the goal in Macedonia against Candia was, I think he's a good striker. He's a great striker. He deserves a lot of praise for the fact that he's doing all this in 19 years old. Just to note that it's like 2 years old. He's like 2 years older than André Silva, who like he's a great player. But everyone like says that André Silva is so much better than Cutrone, obviously, but people need to take into account the age, that the age difference 2 years is still quite a lot. And I think Cutrone, for me, as of now, he's not a starter. As I mentioned on Twitter the other day, I think André Silva should be starting all games. And I think he should be our main striker, because if you spend 40 million for a striker, you expect him to be a starter and you expect him to be the game changer. And he showed against Roma that he is capable of being the game changer. I think he was really great. He had a great performance, and the only thing missing was a goal. But I think that the way it is, the starting lineups are looking like now is quite good. And I think the three strikers should rotate because we're gonna play a lot of games this season, and I think Cutrone will get a lot of time in the Europa League and in Serie A also. But for me now, André Silva should be the starter, and preferably Suso should play in the trequartista role under him for me, because I didn't see a good link up between Kalinic and André Silva yesterday. It wasn't satisfactory for me. So I think Suso and André Silva could do much better together, but that's just my opinion, and I think that Suso is also our best player, and leaving him on the bench is quite, well, I was surprised about it, and I think he could have made a difference yesterday, but we can't change that anymore. So yeah, that's what I'd like to say.
Yeah, we touched on it in a previous podcast about how to get the best out of Suso, and it appears that a 3-5-2 just isn't the way to do it, is it, Piero?
No, I don't think it is. That's really my biggest hang-up with the formation change is that arguably Milan's two best players, at least going forward, are Jack Bonaventura and Suso, and the 3-5-2 really doesn't take advantage of their best qualities, I think. And even with a 4-3-3, for the detractors who say, well, you would have to drop one of Jack or Calhanoglu, I think both of them could perfectly coexist well on the left side with one of them playing on the wing and one of them playing more of a mezzala role.
I think that there's definitely going to be some time allowed for Suso to adjust to a new role as a secondary striker if you're going to play a 3-5-2, but ultimately from what we've seen, it just doesn't seem to quite slot into that as naturally as we thought. I think now you're looking at perhaps playing a 3-5-1-1. Which again, if you've not got that sort of physical presence up front, then it can leave you a little bit isolated up top, I think. But again, these are problems that I think Montella should have sorted out before the season started, and it's problems that are created by switching formation just a few games into the season and abandoning the approach that you've been working on all pre-season. But just looking more specifically at the Europa League before we move on to Sunday's absolute disgrace. We've played two games, we've won two, we've got a goal difference of +5. We've got AEK Athens at home in the next game, who are in second place. Nikita, if we beat AEK Athens, which we should, then that's pretty much qualification sorted, isn't it?
I completely agree. I think at the San Siro, not beating AEK Athens would be a disgrace as Roma's game against Milan was. I think we should get the 3 points quite easily, well, after the Rijeka game, I wouldn't be so confident, but I think we should get the 3 points. And then eventually, I mean, the good thing is that then there are three games left, and we could really let rest a lot of players in the remaining three games. And I still we think we could like collect enough points to top the group and to go into the like knockout phase in a better position. So I think the 3 points would definitely be a huge step towards qualification, and it would be also good for us because we could concentrate more on Serie A in December and November. So yeah.
Yeah, I think what you said is right. It's important that we rack up points early and often so we can perhaps start to see players like Locatelli and Jose Mauri, given more of a chance. Piero, it's perhaps something that doesn't get talked about enough, but it is important to finish top of a group in Europe, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, because that'll dictate what kind of opponent you're going to get in the second round. And just as Nikita was saying, especially, it's important for us to try and finish top of the group so we can make sure we get some more playing time to players like Mauri. Locatelli, especially, I feel like if we don't give him the minutes that he needs this season, then he's not going to make the kind of jump that we're going to need to see from him in a year or two, and perhaps Villa is too old to be playing in the central defensive midfield place. So, absolutely, it's important for us to finish top of the group. especially if we are going to need to make an even deeper run in the Europa League on account of not finishing in the top four. So it's absolutely imperative that we finish at the top of the group.
Yeah, in a position to do so at the moment, but of course that game against Athens is going to be pretty important. Right, this is what you've been waiting for, lads. Sunday, we played against Roma at home in Serie A. Our recent record against Roma has just, you know, it's not been good at all. I think we've won 1 in 10 games against them. Make that 1 in 11 now. So that is absolutely dreadful. Of course, we lost 2-0. It was going well until about the 70th minute. Then Edin Dzeko scored with a deflected shot that beat Donnarumma at his left post. And then scored a second goal late on as a shot was deflected straight into the path of Florenzi. And he made it 2-0. So as a result, we're stuck in seventh place. We've now moved 3 points behind Roma, who have a game in hand. We're 4 points behind Lazio in fourth. Nikita, you know, what went wrong on Sunday? You know, it was going so well for a while. We showed a bit of encouragement, and then it was the same old defensive lack of organisation that cost us.
To be honest, Oli, I disagree with you a bit that it was going completely well, because I think that the first half was really bad from us. The first half, I didn't see anything there. We were quite more compact, I'd say, than against Sampdoria or against Lazio. We looked like more of a team at the back, especially, and we didn't let Roma into anything, but we didn't get into anything ourselves. It was really a boring and dull first half for me. And yeah, the positive is that we were more compact. We didn't let Dzeko into the game too much. But on the other hand, Kalinic and Andres Silva were almost non-existent as well. I mean, Andres Silva was much better in the second half. And then, yeah, as you said, the first 20 minutes of the second half were quite good. I wouldn't again say that anything spectacular, and I definitely wouldn't say that it was great, as Montella said it was. He said that he was satisfied with our performance, and the only thing that was bad about it was the result. So I think that's pretty pathetic, honestly, because we basically played good 20 minutes, and Andres Silva was great in those 20 minutes, but overall, I wouldn't be so positive about our performance as Montella was, because again, we played not as a team, but as a bunch of individuals. I mean, all the players tried to do something, but mostly was alone, or mostly just two players, like, passed, made a couple of good passes, but then the key passes were quite off, especially from Kessié, Bilia, and it wasn't good. It wasn't good, and the midfielders, the ones who should create the chances. Were insufficient. And I mean, we were dependent on Andres Silva only. Andres Silva, who's a very technical attacker with great passing and who's quite quick as well, we were really dependent on him in the final third of the pitch. And that's shocking. I mean, we have Çalhanoğlu, we have Kessié, who's a great, he's great on his day in his passing, his runs, everything. But yesterday, I don't know what happened, honestly, to him. Bilia tried a lot, but most of his passes went, I don't even know where. But so, I mean, the midfield didn't do enough yesterday. And overall, we didn't look like a team. We just, all of the players tried to do everything on their own. And we were very much dependent on Andres Silva when we were in the final third of the pitch. Because otherwise, we had nothing except the shot of Bonucci after the corner kick, if I remember correctly. So for me, the performance wasn't as good as many people say, and the result was obviously even worse.
Yeah, that Bonucci shot from the corner was in the 62nd minute, and it was the first shot on target for us in 181 minutes in the league. Piero, it was a terrible result, but you know, the cohesion's just not there, is it? The team doesn't look like they're gelling.
No, they don't, and I think the first half was really emblematic of that, because really all we could muster were long balls for first 45 minutes. One credit to Montella is that if he was in, at least at halftime, he got into the players' ears and told them they had to play shorter balls on the ground and try and work it around. But we're still not seeing the kind of play that I think even he expects out of the team. And whether that's mostly to blame on the formation or not, I'm not quite sure. One of the things I pointed out, at least in terms of the things that we learned from the Rijeka game, is that we're not really using our regista this season. I think that the 3-5-2, for whatever reason, so far we haven't seen the best out of that position. One of the reasons why I think the 4-3-3 would be better, outside of being able to utilize Jack and Suso on the wings, which I think would help create more chances than we're getting, is that we get better play out of our regista. One of the reasons why we got Bia in this offseason is that he's one of the best in the world, if, you know, clearly one of the best in Serie A. So we kind of need that presence in the middle of the field, calming things down, but also knowing when to send the long ball up to the wing, and I don't think we're really seeing that so far.
Yeah, one of the things which Greg, our writer, mentioned in one of his pieces after the game was that Biglia has... We saw it yesterday, perhaps in the first half. Biglia has tended to slow the game down a little bit. Whenever we needed that quick break, he seems to get on the ball, and perhaps it's an element of indecision, or perhaps it's just he's been told to cool the tempo on the game and get us back into position. Nikita, do you think that Biglia's had the kind of effect that Montella would have wanted?
I think, honestly, not the effect that Montella or any of us actually wanted. I think definitely with him we look much more solid in the defensive phase, in terms of midfield, obviously. At the back, I think the back three is still a little bit. I think the cooperation between the three players isn't ideal still, but in the midfield, I think Biglia looks very solid, and his tackling is good, his interceptions are quite good, but in the offensive phase, I'm not convinced, and I don't think Montella is convinced as well, although I don't see into his head, obviously. So I would obviously expect more from him in the offensive phase. I would expect better passing from him, better key passes, but it's hard to say. We needed to reinforce the register role for many years, obviously.
Something, obviously, we haven't had chance to talk with you about this, Piero, because it's your first time on the podcast, but it's a broad kind of question, but what is the right system for us moving forward? You mentioned the 4-3-3 would probably be best. Do you think Montella should definitely go back to that, or do you think he's going to stick with the 3-5-2 now?
Unfortunately, I think he is going to be stubborn and stick with the 3-5-2, but I really think the 4-3-3 would be best. If for no other reason, if you take a look back at the previous season with the 4-3-3, Suso was big for us. Whether he was cutting in on his left foot and shooting, or just sending in one of his great crosses, the thing that was missing last season, at least for us, was that kind of target man in the box who was going to run onto the end of it and score those goals. And I think with Silva or Kalinic or Cutrone, we've got that striker who can get on the end of the ball. The problem is we're just not really generating any of those crosses like we were last season. Really, if you look at the right side of our field, it's kind of devoid of any kind of action, with the exception of, you know, the occasional Kessie run, or in this previous game we saw Borini actually step up and send in a couple of crosses. But for the most part, our right wing is devoid of any kind of danger, and I think that without moving Suso out there, we're going to see that trend continue.
Yeah, it's interesting you just touched on him. That was going to be my next point. I certainly was very, very, very nervous when I saw Fabio Borini's name come up on the team sheet. I thought that, you know, he's not a natural wing-back by any means. But Nikita, he did a decent job, didn't he?
Yeah, he did a fantastic job for me, honestly. For me, he was the best player with Andres Silva and Ricardo Rodriguez, probably. I think the role suits him a lot because he's not exactly a technical player or a player who excels in dribbling and stuff like that. So playing him as a striker was an obvious mistake because he added almost nothing. But as a wingback, I think he adds a lot because he has good crossing. He's quite quick. And he's like, I mean, he's a fighter. He just runs up and down, and that's exactly what a wing back needs to do. I mean, to support the offensive game and also to support the defense. And I think he did that really well against Roma. So I think it was a quite encouraging sign to see him doing well there, because I don't think Abate is enough for that position. And I think Calabria is still too young. So I mean, if Borini can continue like this, it's just a good sign for us.
Piero, do you agree? Do you think Barini's got a vital role to play now after that performance against Roma, or do you think we should still be looking for Abate or maybe Calabria for games moving forward?
That's a tough one because Borini did step up against Roma, who's typically a really tough defense and a great midfield to get around. On the other hand, he isn't a natural right back. I think Abate probably, if he isn't faster, he is just as fast as Borini. The problem with Abate is that you can't really count on his crosses coming anywhere near the striker in the box. And Nikita's right that Calabria is still a little young. I'd like to see him play more in the Europa League, for example. But, as long as this Borini experiment, continues to look like it did this past week, I would be fine with it. Whether or not we can keep up the 3-5-2 formation and not get embarrassed in our next outing is a different question altogether.
Yeah, we'll get to that upcoming game against our noisy neighbours from the city. But one of the things that particularly frustrated me, and believe me, I could go on a massive rant here, is once again Montella's lack of proactivity with his substitutions. I always say that as a manager, you need to be proactive and not reactive when it comes to making substitutions. So you've seen a stage in the game. Where perhaps for a 15-minute period after half time, we're dominating, we're on top. There's only one team that's going to score, and then Nikola Kalinic is gesturing to come off. It's since come out from the Croatian national team coach that Kalinic was in fact playing on painkillers, which suggests to me that he perhaps shouldn't have even started the game yesterday. But after 60 minutes, he's pulled up and he's gesturing that he wants to come off. And yet Montella still doesn't use his first substitution until the 74th minute. Nikita, is there any defence of Montella's substitutions, or does it just come down to being totally inept tactically?
I was lost of words, honestly, when I saw Kalinic saying, signifying that he wants to come off, and he didn't come off. I mean, he did come off, but later. I was surprised because we obviously needed that those fresh legs in the final minutes to try to do something with the game. But overall, his substitutions so far have been really, really bad, because yesterday we all saw that Çalhanoğlu's performance wasn't good. And eventually he got a red card. I mean, nobody obviously could have known that that would happen, but still he had a really bad performance. And even though he was a bit better in the second half, I think Bonaventura should have gone there much more sooner than in the last 10 minutes. That's one thing. And the other thing is that keep leaving Suso on the bench, our best attacking player, our player with best crossing, our player who can produce great passes, crosses, who can shoot with a great way. Leaving him on the bench for 90 minutes is a fail for me, is a huge fail for me. And when you want to do something with the game, when you have want to change the game, this is exactly the player you have to put on. So with all due respect to Cutrone, I think Suso should have gone instead of Kalinic. And I think it should have happened much sooner, and also Bonaventura, obviously, instead of Çalhanoğlu. Perhaps something could have changed about the game, and it would be great if it had happened. But Montella's stubbornness in not substituting players, I think, possibly could have guaranteed at least a point yesterday.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think the substitution that should have been made when Kalinic was gesturing for an injury, sorry, for a substitution because of his injury, was Suso coming on for him. We were on top, but I think what we needed is for Andre Silva to push up a little bit because he was dropping too deep, and we needed somebody to play as almost a false nine or someone just behind Andre Silva just to give that link between the midfield, who were on top at that point, and our front two. And I think Suso would have been the man to do just that. And I totally agree as well. I would have brought on Bonaventura for Calhanoglu. Obviously, the red card late on. You could argue that he doesn't need to make the challenge, but you know, it's a one game ban, which you'll get for two yellow cards, and it's unfortunate. But like you said, you can't foresee those kind of things happening. But I think he was tiring at that point, and Bonaventura could have provided that spark, even if it's just somebody who's going to come on and be instructed to have a shot every now and again, and just keep testing the goalkeeper, which we didn't do enough of yesterday. Piero, can you make a case for his lack of substitutions, or are you with us? Do you think that he's got to hold his hands up and say that he didn't make the changes soon enough?
Oh no, I'm 100% in agreement with you guys. That's one of the things that has really fired me up about Montella so far in these last couple of games. And it was so obvious in the Sampdoria game that changes needed to be made, not only tactically, but, you know, positionally with some players. And we didn't see any reaction. He didn't make any changes in the second half, I don't believe until after the 70th minute. And he repeated the same mistake against Roma, where it was obvious that, as Nikita says, players like Calhanoglu weren't up to their best yesterday and clearly needed to come off. But he stuck with them, and we saw what happened.
Do you think that this is basically what you alluded to earlier about him being stubborn as a coach, in that he picks an 11 and he almost says that with us having to balance competitions this season, that those 11 are going to be the ones that, if they can, they'll stay out on the pitch and get us a result?
Well, he likes to say that he doesn't believe in formations, that he really just wants to see a kind of fluidity of play, and, you know, players are interchangeable and they can move around. But at a certain point, you do need to decide tactically what your team is going to look like, and you need to decide who those players are that are going to get the best out of it. And I don't know whether he's still trying to figure that out 3 months into the job, but it's clear that there's something not clicking about the team, whether it's the formation or the people who he has it on the field. I've seen writers argue most recently that he is turning over too many players, trying to balance out the Europa League and the Serie A right now too much. I think at this point, 3 months into the season, considering the preseason time he had with the team, at this point he should know who his best 11 are. And he doesn't seem to be making any strides to that end right now.
Yeah, I made a point in the last podcast about that we need to now prioritise Serie A basically completely, and that the Europa League, even if we have to play our second 11 every game, you know, it should take care of itself, given, with all due respect, the quality of opposition that we face. We've now got a 2 week break. Let's look ahead to, well, we're calling it the big one, but I'm actually kind of dreading it. We've got the Derby della Madonnina in 2 weeks' time. What do we think is going to happen? Do you think that we're going to really struggle because Inter have picked up 19 points out of 21, or do you think, you know, that with it being the Derby, absolutely anything can happen?
Well, honestly, I mean, the Derby is a really specific game. Every year you never know who's gonna turn out the luckier team in the match. But this year I just see a much more solid Inter side, with Spalletti doing great job so far, and our team that is still looking for some identity, some tactical identity. And In the Derby, it obviously in the end comes out to who has the bigger will, and the fans also have quite a big role in the game. But I'm not sure. I think it'll be a draw, most likely. But I wouldn't be surprised if we lost again. But I can see us winning against this Inter side. At least not if we show the same performance as against Roma, Sampdoria, or Rijeka, because that was really bad. And I'm not sure what Montella plans to do to, like, improve the situation, and I'm not sure if he's planning to change the formation again, or probably not, I assume. But we will see. But as of now, I'm not convinced, and I think the best we can get from the derby is a draw.
Piero, when you look at our 11 against Inter's 11, player for player, we're certainly not outclassed in any position, perhaps other than, with Icardi up front, who hasn't actually scored a goal in open play for since the end of August, I think. But the derby comes down to different things than that, doesn't it? Even though we're struggling and they're flying, do you think that we can get a result?
The thing about the derby is, as Nikita alluded to, anything is possible because they typically come down to the team that wants it more, that plays with more grinta. They're not necessarily decided by the team that's in the best form. And speaking of Inter's form, while they've collected a lot of points, they haven't looked convincing so far this season. I think that, but to their credit, they are winning ugly. And that does count for something because right now Milan is losing ugly. So I think tactically, Spalletti probably has the advantage because I think he's simply the better coach. I think Montella probably has better players at his disposal over the starting 11. But with the derby, it's really just going to come down to the team that wants it more. And unfortunately, right now, our team looks fairly dispassionate. So I don't know if that's really gonna help us this time around. I hope for a better result than a draw or a loss, but I don't really see it right now.
Yeah, the Derby has a knack for dishing out some surprising results, but I think this time too many things point to us losing that game, I'm afraid. We've seen Montella recently be outcoached by Marco Giampaolo, obviously Sampdoria manager, and he's been outcoached by Eusebio Di Francesco in the sense that both of them completely stopped what we were trying to do and then both picked their moments and scored in the last 20 minutes, scored that first goal in the last 20 minutes, and that is a theme that we don't want to see continue. But here we are now. We've got another tough game, technically away, but we all know it's basically a neutral game against Inter at San Siro. Spalletti is doing a good job on the results part of things. The thing is, they're going in a new direction as well, with Spalletti taking the helm the start of this season. But they haven't quite gelled yet either, and they're still picking up points. They went to Roma and won 3-1 early in the season, and that perhaps gave them a bit of a confidence boost. And now, like I said, they've gone on to collect 19 points out of the first 21. So once they do eventually gel, you've got to assume that they're going to keep on winning. But perhaps also their luck could yet change. And if they were to play like they have done against Benevento and like they did against Bologna, like if they play like that against us, perhaps we're the kind of opposition that can exploit that. And Inter will have an eye as well on that Napoli game that comes after us. If they were to somehow lose against us, and then they would have to go to Napoli and probably get beat there as well, they're going to instantly lose quite a bit of ground. Let's say worst case scenario happens and we lose the derby. Nikita, is Montella, is he gone? Is he gone then? Is that going to be the final straw for Mirabelli and for Sonny and the board?
I would be honestly completely shocked if he wouldn't be sacked because I honestly expected the sack already now after Roma, but apparently he has full confidence, so it's left this way. But if we lose against Inter, I don't see another solution than to sack him and probably appoint Ancelotti. I don't. There is no better coach available out there, and he is a coach that knows Milan. He's an Italian coach. He knows the language. He knows the team. He knows the country. He's an experienced coach. He has won so many titles in his life, in his career, that I think he would be able to somehow solidify the situation and to make it more compact and not so chaotic. I mean, I don't. I saw a tweet the other day that said, I don't know if Carlo Ancelotti will get us into top four, but I'm definitely sure that Montella won't get us into top four, which is, I think, quite a good description of the situation. Ancelotti probably, I'm not gonna say like in a bad way, but probably he is losing a bit. He's probably not too adapted to the modern game, and it perhaps is a little bit, let's say, not finished, but he's losing it a bit, I'd say. But still, he's a manager that can make the situation more compact and not so chaotic, and therefore, I think reaching top four with him is definitely much simpler than reaching top four with Montella, if Montella continues with the same approach and the same tactical approach that he has until now. So I think an Inter loss would definitely mean Montella being sacked and hopefully Ancelotti being appointed.
Yeah, it's interesting because in one of the previous episodes, myself and AJ Anthony Torgrood, we were talking about the possibility of Montella being sacked because Ancelotti might come available. And at that point, he was still in charge at Bayern. And we talked about it for 2 minutes because it just wasn't a possibility at all. It just didn't seem feasible. But now here we are talking about it like it's just a case of when rather than if. There's been reports in the Italian media that he's going to take the rest of the season off, and go travelling, and that he would only return if a job in the Premier League became available for him. Don't know how true those things are. The Italian media generally get quite a lot of stuff wrong, but if the chance comes up, I think we have to go for Ancelotti, to be honest. There were talks that we've already reached out and made contact with him. I think a lot of it comes down to perhaps organisation is a key part of football, and I think that he knows how to manage a team. But I think another big part of it is man management. I think Carlo Ancelotti is probably one of the best man managers in the world. A lot of his former players talk about, you know, how good a guy he is, not just a coach, and how the players always feel like they're performing at their best under him. The Bayern players clearly had something against him. You know, there was reports that five of them sort of pretty much conspired to get him sacked. I think that's what happens when you go from the modern day coach, you know, the benchmark for modern day coaching, which is Pep Guardiola, to someone who has these more traditional methods like Ancelotti. It just didn't work out at Bayern. Piero, they always say that you shouldn't go back to somewhere where you had pretty much the perfect tenure first time round. Would you like to see Ancelotti back at the club, or do you think that it wouldn't quite work out the way that everyone's thinking?
Well, to be perfectly honest, I'm a little torn because on the one hand, I agree that I don't think Montella is going to be the man to bring us into the top four if our current form is any indication. But on the other hand, I don't think that Ancelotti is the kind of coach that would accept a short-term position in the hopes that maybe that turns into a long-term position, so that if he were to come back, Milan would have to give him at least a 2-year contract, for example. And the reason why I have trepidation over that is because I think the real man that Milan want to coach next season is Conte. And I think that Conte is likely to become available again at the end of the season when he's done with Chelsea. And I would hate to lose that long-term option to try and shore up something in the short term, which isn't to say that I don't think Ancelotti would do a good job this season and beyond. However, I think Milan already missed once with Conte when he left Juventus previously, and they don't want to miss out on him again, if at all possible.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I did see something this week suggesting that Conte was very much on the radar of the Milan board. Nikita, do you think that there could be a situation in which the management will give Montella the full confidence until the end of the season, and then, you know, if Conte is available at all, or maybe if Ancelotti decides he wants a return, then they'll, you know, they'll make the move and they'll get rid of him?
Yeah, definitely. I think the management's goal is to like bring in a high profile coach, which both Ancelotti and Conte obviously are. And I think that as you guys said, Conte is probably the name tipped most by our management. And I remember reading an interview with him like a week ago where he said that he's definitely gonna return to Italy, and he's also like he won't stay at Chelsea for a long time. So I think this is quite a clear indication that if he doesn't return to the Italian national team, which I think is not too likely, he is probably gonna, or he may come back to, or he may come to Milan, because I just don't see any other team any other possibility for him in Italy. He won't come back to Juventus because there's Allegri there, and he left on quite negative terms, let's say. He won't go to Roma because, I mean, I don't see Roma paying his huge salary. He won't go to Inter because Inter have Spalletti. Or, I mean, it's just hypothetical. Maybe they will fire him at the end of the season, though I don't expect that because Spalletti is a good coach. And he won't definitely go to Napoli because, again, it's an issue of salary, and I think Sarri has full trust of De Laurentiis in Napoli. So I think the only possibility for him in Italy, if not the Italian national team, which again I think is not too probable, is Milan. And I would be delighted if that happened, as I would be delighted with Ancelotti as well. But as Piero said, probably Conte, as a more modern manager and a manager more successful, let's say, in the modern game, in the new modern phase of the sport, Conte would probably be the better pick for us at the moment.
Yeah, I agree with what you both said. I think that he's gonna look. When I say he, I mean obviously the Milan ownership. Sorry, are gonna look for that kind of flagship name to take us forward. Montella doesn't seem to be the man to take us forward long term. And I think that come the end of the season, if he is still there, then we're gonna be looking at successes. But you know. If things go bad in 2 weeks' time, we could be talking about a replacement sooner rather than later. So yeah, that just about wraps it up, boys. So what I'm going to do, starting with you, Piero, I will ask for a prediction for the derby game. It's hard to call, but you know what's going to happen. Put your neck on the line.
I think that the best we can hope for is a 1-1 draw. And I say that as the ultimate pessimist, but I really think the most realistic outcome is going to be a draw.
Nikita?
I agree with Piero, but I think the draw will be a 2-2-1, as in the last two derbies. Again, I mean, if we approach the game in a different manner, we can win, obviously. But if we continue in the same chaotic way, in the tactically clueless way, I see a draw as the most probable and the result that I would probably take, because I can't see us winning at the moment, but things may change in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I'm with you too. I can see this being a draw. I think Inter will take great comfort from the fact that they're 7 points clear of us already, and they've had an unbeaten start to the season. I think it's going to be important for us that we don't lose this game. Really important, and as a result, I think we might see two sides that cancel each other out. But of course, there's enough quality players on the pitch to see a moment or two of quality. So I'm gonna go with a 1-1 draw. But just to let you all know, we will have a special Derby preview podcast coming out next week, in which we have a very special guest. So I will announce the details of that nearer the time. But for the meantime, thank you very much for listening. I'm sorry that you've had to put up with our negative ranting for going on 50 minutes now. And hopefully in the future we'll be able to bring you more positive podcasts if the team manage to turn this around. So yeah, thank you for listening. I've been Oliver Fisher. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher. I've been joined by Nikita Fesyukov.
Yeah, thanks for listening, guys, and I hope to bring you more positive insight in the near future.
And thanks for joining us, Piero.
It's a pleasure to be here. Like I said, hopefully we have some better news or better prognostications for you in the future.
Excellent stuff, and we look forward to you joining us for the next podcast. In the meantime, make sure to follow us on Twitter at Sempre Milancom. Go to facebook.com/SempreMilancom for all the good stuff on there. Follow us on Instagram.com/SempreMilancom, and also check out our YouTube channel, youtube.com/SempreMilancom. Thank you very much for listening, guys. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.